And welcome in live to Falcons Inside the Draft. My name is Chris Domino. Welcome to AtlantaFalcons.com. Let me tell you who we're actually sitting with today. That man is Jay Adams. He gives you everything that you need to know about the Atlanta Falcons on a daily basis. Jay, as a matter of fact, why don't you give everybody now how they can find you and keep up to date with everything.
Falcons Jay Adams on Twitter and Falcons Jay Adams on Instagram.
And that will come in handy later because we're going to be giving away stuff.
Yes.
Which is another reason you want to stick around. That's John Michaels. He does the sidelines for your Atlanta Falcons. And this, of course, is Corey Peters, defensive lineman for your Atlanta Falcons. I'm just wondering, can you get me a couple of telephone books, please? Stand up and maybe do this whole show.
There's a reason we picked the seats the way we did.
Let's talk real quick about what the first-round pick Desmond Trufant obviously means. There really is a relationship between corners and defensive linemen, is there not? I'm assuming when everybody says, well, what'd you get? There are certain positions that actually help your position a little bit more than others.
Well, as a defensive lineman, I always want them to pick defensive players. I hope they spend all their picks on defensive players. But, you know, the cornerback-defensive line relationship is critical because the quicker we get there, the faster the ball either has to come out or we can create sacks for ourselves. And the tighter the coverage, the longer the quarterback will have to hold the ball. And that allow us the opportunity to get more sacks.
I'll ask you about Desmond himself coming up in a few seconds. Jay, let me ask you, when you heard the name last night, from a numbers point of view, a lot of us said, hey, corner makes the most sense. Now, which one will they get? Thomas Dimitroff moves up those eight spots to get the one they wanted from day one.
Yeah, and we had kept our eye on Trufant here in the weeks leading up to the draft. His name became more and more connected with the Falcons, but we were still unsure because there were so many cornerback names that were connected with the Falcons at that point. And suddenly, 3 days before the draft, DJ Hayden comes out of nowhere, and suddenly he's the top corner. And so Trufant was the one that kind of stayed pretty consistent. And you got to think that they had a feeling that somebody was targeting him for them to move up eight spots to 22 to get him. But I think that was the guy they wanted, and they got their match.
That'll be confirmed. I had a chance to catch up with Thomas Dimitroff, obviously on the radio here in Atlanta on 790 The Zone and 790thezone.com. But also, we did an interview here. He's going to talk about why the move-up had to be made. John, let me ask you, a lot of times when people talk about positions, they start to talk about conferences that guys played in. What was the level of competition? Well, in this case, you worry about receivers, you worry about quarterbacks, and sometimes you worry about the physicality or the speed of a particular conference coming out of the Pac-12 and up Northwest.
He's got all of that. You're talking about an offense, riddled conference. The Pac-12 throws the football all over the place. You had Oregon fast-paced going up and down the field. And I watched him play in a man-to-man situation where they played an NFL-style coverage at Washington and excel in that. This is a guy that was covering the tight ends from Stanford, talking about Zach Ertz and the 6'6 kid or 6'8 kid they had as well. And he was able to do all of that. So maybe not the SEC level of competition, but when you look at an offensive set, Pac-12 brings you all of that.
Speaking of the SEC, let me ask you, 12 guys going in the first round. Congratulations. I know there's a lot of conference pride when a number like that is thrown around. Do you actually think about that? Because you know what the level of play was in the SEC. When you see draft picks, whether it's the Falcons pick or others, do you start to think about how they might fit into the NFL game based upon what it is they saw in college?
Well, I automatically assume that every player in the SEC is going to be as ready as you can be to come in the NFL. Of course, it's still a substantial jump. But, you know, I think that the SEC is really a conference that provides that opportunity. I can remember, you know, in bowl games when we played teams from the ACC right. and other conferences, and we were, you know, middle-of-the-pack SEC team. We were much more physical than they were. And, you know, even if you look at the matchups, you know, we would be the eighth team in the SEC, and we would play a three from another conference, and a lot of times we won.
What's the reality? Let me ask you, when you hear Desmond's name last night, you and I talked, we all talked before this, you thought numbers-wise again. Mike Nolan plays a lot of 5 DBs. I mean, that was over 60% of the time, and there's 6 DBs on the field. So you knew you needed them, so there was a good chance you were actually going to grab the corner. What do you, as a player and now a teammate of Desmond Trufant, what do you try to find out about him between last night and today?
Well, there's been, you know, a lot of different talk in the locker room, you know, especially with Dante leaving and then losing Brent to free agency. You know, that corner position was definitely open opposite Asante. And a lot of guys in the locker room mentioned that Tim Lewis, our secondary coach, was actually one of the people responsible for drafting one of his older brothers. So that was kind of something that we had talked about amongst ourselves. And, you know, of course, we draw our own conclusion. Yeah. Of course, we don't actually know anything more than, you know, people watching at home. You know, but we're excited about it. I after the draft, you know, I went and looked at some of the highlights on YouTube and that sort of thing, and really got a good feel for his game, and I think he's a good player.
Jay, one of the other things that happens is sometimes when you take a draft pick, you start to think about the makeup of the team, not just on his own side of the ball. Think about this. In the month of August, he's going to get a chance to go, against a Pro Bowler or Matt Ryan. There's Roddy White. There's Julio Jones. How about Tony Gonzalez? And this guy named Steven Jackson comes out of the backfield. So if you really think about it, if you want school and an abbreviated version of school, the month of August is going to be school for Desmond Trufant.
Yeah, and if there's an offense that you want to test yourself against, I would imagine it would be this Falcons offense, like you said, with all the names out there. I mean, there's something to be said about going against this competition level every day. When you're going out there, you're working against the best in a lot of cases. So for Desmond, this is going to be a great test of where he's going to be come August and kind of looking into the season. We know he's going to be an outstanding player, but where is he in August, like you said?
John, one of the other things that you talk about, obviously, too, is not only what he has to do in the month of August to get himself ready, but now you're also talking about the pressure of being a young guy who is expected to come in and play minutes, start Mike Nolan's defense. While it's not overly complicated, he gives you an opportunity. And in today's NFL game, you know, it's not just lockdown on this guy. It's press. It's support run. It's quarterbacks who are trying to get to the outside. The cornerback position has really changed over the last handful of years. And whether you like a guy's size and his weight and all those numbers and the measurables, you really have to now play a couple of different brands of football depending upon who you're going against.
Well, and that's one of the things, and we'll hear the press conference and some of the clips from there that I like from Desmond Trufant, as he said, he's available and ability to do anything. He can blitz. He's a guy that's working on tackling. He's a guy that excels in off-man coverage, that excels in press-man coverage. And think about it. He's got a great role model on the other side now in Asante Samuel, who's been a Pro Bowler in this league year in and year out. Maybe you don't need to use some of the cuts that he gives us from the media, but you're talking about a guy that goes about it the right way, a guy that produces on the field and backs up his talk, and he can look simply at Robert McClain and say, I can step in. Robert McClain's a guy that nobody knew last year going into the Denver game, and suddenly he's an integral part of this team going forward.
And I also think we'll talk coming up about a locker room mentality and really who helps the rookies come along. There's this idea that make sure they know they're rookies. But also, at the end of the day, you need him to be the best football player he can be. Before we get to that, let's actually throw to the press conference. Desmond Trufant had a chance to meet the Atlanta media. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he had a chance to actually come into the facility at Flowery Branch and see what it's like to walk into the big boy world of the NFL.
I can play on the outside. I can play in the slot. I play special teams, but man corner. Can play zone as well. Quickness, change of direction, physical, aggressive. I'm gonna come up and tackle. I'm well-rounded. You know, I try not to leave no weaknesses out there. So I just work on everything and to be a well-rounded corner. Well, my parents from day one instilled that in me that you have to earn everything. You know, like you said, I might not have been the biggest recruit, but, you know, I knew what I could do. And when I got the opportunity, you know, I knew I would open eyes. So, you know, I just continue to work, continue to grind, you know, stay hungry, stay humble. And it's gotten me to this point now.
Any significance to picking the number 21?
I thought about it. That was Deion Sanders' number when he was here. He was a great player, and I would just love to follow in a guy's footsteps like that. It's an honor to wear that number and to be here in general. So, you know, it's pretty cool. I can't wait to put it on.
Do you think you're going to have an adjustment coming to the South as you grew up and played in the Northwest?
It's going to be an adjustment. You know, it's a step up, you know, regardless of where I would have went. But I have family here in the South, in New Orleans. On my dad's side, all my family lives there. So, you know, I'm kind of used to the area. But, yeah, I'm just excited to be here. Of course, it's going to be an adjustment, some new things. But, you know, I'm ready. I'm just happy to be here.
What was the emotion like knowing that you were, like, the third kid in your family to finally going to be able to live out your dream?
It was big. You know, I didn't know how I was going to react when I got picked. But, you know, I shed a tear just because, you know, of how much hard work I've put in. You know, my brothers, they set the path for me. Parents pointed us in the right direction, and we all followed them and listened to them and kept our home values. And, you know, being a third brother now in the NFL, you know, it's big for my family, the city, and we're just looking forward to continue to do great things.
Did you have an opportunity to follow your brother to Washington State? And if so, why did you choose Washington?
Well, growing up, I actually did want to go to Washington State, but, you know, when it was time for me to make my own decision and become my own man. So I chose Washington. But I love Coach Sarkisian. I love Demetrius Martin. He was my position coach. And I just love the vibe. I wanted to turn that program around and be a part of that. And yeah, I have no regrets about that.
Devin, you said last night that you thought the Falcons were a good fit for you. I'm assuming you watched the Seattle game. Do you watch as a fan, or you watch it thinking about how Mike Nolan does things? And I know the TV picture is different than an All-22, but do you actually have that going through your head?
Yes, definitely. You know, similar schemes that I've done in the past, you know, cover three, man, zone, fire zones, things like that. So I know it's going to be easy for me to learn the playbook. And you know, just I think what I mean by the fit, you know, it's great players here. You know, so many guys that here give me better, Julio Jones, Rodney White. I can learn from Asante Samuel. You know, it's just a perfect situation. So I'm just looking to take advantage of it. Yeah, played against some good quarterbacks, Andrew Luck, Matt Barkley, some great receivers as well, too. There's a lot of competition in the Pac-12. Got me ready for this point, definitely. Had some great receivers on my team as well, too. So those guys are great, great players. They're going to be good in the NFL as well. So I'm just looking forward to playing against those guys here.
And that was a little bit earlier today right here at Flowery Branch, Desmond Trufant meeting the media. Let's get first things first. What do you think of the whole look? Man came out. I saw him get out of the car with that look. What do you think?
I think it looked nice. I mean, yeah. He definitely looks the part. Very sharp. I wonder if he picked it out himself or mm-hmm. He had somebody else pick it for him. But I approve. I give it 2 thumbs up.
All right, listen, there's a couple of Husky gentlemen, four Husky gentlemen. Listen, I don't want to tell any tales out of school, but let's be honest. None of us could pull that look off.
I don't think I could. I usually stick middle of the road, right. Pretty safe.
I know you try, John. Listen, no offense, but there's a tapered cut that man was sporting there that's a little bit difficult for guys like us.
There's a bottom area of my body that doesn't fit into what he was doing.
Jay, one of the things you said that people mentioned both on Facebook and on Twitter is how he handled himself. You know, it is one of the tells, how a guy gets up and how he presents himself. It's different. He did it in college. He did it in high school. I'm sure people wanted to talk to him. But how you handle yourself, really, when you get to these moments, that first impression is pretty good. And I think he really... If there's such a thing as truly winning a press conference, he won a press conference today.
Yeah, he nailed it. Just judging from people talking on Twitter and mentioning how impressed they were with how well-spoken he was. Because like you said, the first impression is the most telling one, especially when it comes to fans. Of course, you know what a guy's going to be able to do on the field, but you know how he holds himself, how he presents himself. You could tell that he was maybe a little nervous being up there, and this is a very crazy day for a draft pick. But I thought he held himself, carried himself very well. Very well spoken kid, very thoughtful, nice guy. I was with him when he was touring the facility earlier, shaking hands, looking everybody in the eye, saying nice to meet you. So just a great kid overall. I'm very impressed with
John. There's one other thing too, and Corey, you know this. There are certain guys who come into the locker room knowing how to handle a locker room situation. He's got good bloodlines, we know that. But I also think a big part, and I've seen it in other sports, coaches' sons, father or brother played in baseball, and all of a sudden through the minor leagues, how you figure out how to be a man in this environment, the sooner you figure it out, I think the better. I think advantage Desmond coming into this building.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that, you know, traveling with the team the last 2 years, I've seen the camaraderie you guys have and just the way that the Falcons go about their business. he looks like he fits that mold. And I know a lot of people, fans, want to say, well, why didn't we go draft this guy? And why don't we go get this guy? Well, Thomas Dimitroff, Mike Smith, Arthur Blank, they have a way that they're going to go about their business. And when you get a young man that's had a brother that's played in the NFL, still could be as a free agent, you look at him and you say, he's going to understand what the business is all about. It's not coming in as a first-round pick, being flashy, being loud, trying to be the center of attention. It's come in here and try to fit a need and help this team win a Super Bowl.
And just going off of that, if I think we've gotten to the point, you know, this is the sixth draft with Thomas Dimitroff, and if you want his tell, if you want to know what he values, take a look at it. This is the 18th team captain that he has drafted in his tenure since 2008, 34th senior out of 39. So, I mean, these are very important things. And Trufant fits all those bills.
We're going to hear from Thomas Dimitroff in a second. I had a chance to sit down and do an exclusive one-on-one with him just earlier today as we look back to last night and look ahead. But I got to ask you this. You are eventually rooting. Now, I know it's a world where everybody's trying to come take your job. You're used to that. But you are looking for a defensive lineman because at that point somebody can go get the biscuits in the morning. I mean, you need a positional guy to come in, do you not, to make sure that he understands he's a rookie?
You know, like I said, I always want to bring in good guys, but there's always going to be somebody to get the biscuits. you know, but I'm looking forward to see what they do with the rest of the draft. I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to it.
We'll talk about what's coming up, not only today, but probably for the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow as well. But first, let's have a chance to look back last night. I had a chance to do that with Thomas Dimitroff, your general manager. Welcome to Falcons Live Inside the Draft on AtlantaFalcons.com. My name is Chris Domino. Happy to spend a few minutes with Falcons General Manager Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas, before we talk about how you ended up moving up to 22 to grab Desmond Trufant, let's talk quickly. You sent me a text late last night that said, he's our type of guy. That's only five words, but I think it probably means a heck of a lot more than that. Why don't you tell Falcons fans what it means?
We've been following and monitoring his career for the last 2 years. When you watch an individual like this, how he moves around on the field, you get caught up with that because he's got a combination of athleticism, speed, power, everything about him. But it's also the way he carries himself on the field. We've talked about this year in and year out about urgent athleticism. After we went and worked him out recently, we realized walking away from there, this guy epitomizes urgent athleticism. The way that he approaches the game, the way that he works on his craft, as we mentioned last night, the way that he sticks his foot in the ground and breaks on balls, everything about him is urgent, and he's trying to get better. We like that a lot about him. We think that he's the type of guy we can continue to build around here, and we're fired up about it.
Cornerback's also a position, when you go look at film, not every ball's thrown in a guy's direction. What is he doing on those plays? I'm assuming you're trying to figure out why or why not to draft a guy. When you start to look at a bunch of video and film over years, don't you try to figure out what's his ability to be part of a play that maybe he wasn't originally going to be a part of?
It's what we say all the time. I mean, what he does 10 yards away can also affect what happens 10 more yards down the field. And I think that's very important. Again, raised in a football family, more than just the average football family. He has two brothers that play in the National Football League. He understands it very, very well. He understands the dedication and the commitment to be a pro. And that's something that's going to be working in his favor.
He got rave reviews at the Senior Bowl as well, just the way he carried himself. There is something about maybe the way a guy carries himself that you know he's going to fit in with grown men once you get to this level.
There are a number of guys in that in the Senior Bowl that were impressive as far as their movement and athleticism. But that element of what Desmond Trufant brought to the table was something that I didn't think was paralleled by a lot in this year's class, and quite honestly, over a number of classes. I think the full picture here is something that's very impressive.
Let's talk about going up to 22 quickly then. Part of what you know is who you want, but you also have to figure out who else might want him and who else might jump up to get him. That's also part of the chess match game, especially when it's a singular round on a given night, is it not?
Yeah, this was one of the more active first rounds that we've been in. You know, 2011 aside, which really wasn't that active, we had things taken care of before. Right. There was a lot of moving around in this draft. Not only teams around us, teams calling us, we were calling a number of different teams, not only in the middle of the round, but all the way into the 20s, where we ended up doing the deal. I just think it was one of those things that we were so driven to acquire this individual that we were almost willing it to happen. And it was interesting because Smitty was whispering me like he does on the sideline, we're going to win this game. And you know, Mike said, look, as much as this seems like there's a lot in front of us here, I believe we're going to get this guy. And so to his credit, we ended up pulling him off the board at 22.
You did not think he was going to be available at 30 is basically what it comes down to.
No question about it. I know that for a fact, as far as my communication with a number of different general managers, I know that there were a lot of people that were looking at him throughout the draft, throughout the first round. And I knew that there was going to be a nice run, apparently, on corners in that 20 to 32 range. Couldn't run the risk of it.
Day two starts, no third-round pick part of that deal. The possibility of moving back into the third round, I know that's some of the work that gets done before it actually, or while it's going on tonight as well. But you wanted and needed that second-round pick, did you not? You knew that moving up too far, now all of a sudden you're out of the second round, and that's not a combination you wanted to deal with.
No, we were very happy that we were able to maintain our second-round pick. We've been without the second-round pick for, you know, a couple of different situations, again, back in 11, but also with Tony Gonzalez when we traded for him. They've worked out well for us. But we really wanted to hold on to our second, and in where we were as a team right now and how we're looking to grow, that second round is going to be important for us. And, you know, to get back into the third round, is, you know, it's going to be a pretty, it's going to be a solid task. It's not going to be easy to do. And if we don't do that, we'll be fine because we feel like we have a number of picks in, you know, in the fourth and on that we can continue to build this football.
Last thing, when people, and I know the first round just seems to be its own separate entity, people will grade a draft before a guy plays it down based upon the first round pick. A draft class is a class. You do this, therefore I don't have to do this in the second, third, or fourth round. Isn't that really the way that a general manager has to think? What's my combination of players at the end of the third day, not just at the end of the first day?
We talk about that all the time. This, again, we've mentioned chess match. This is a part of it. I guess you could call it part of the chess match because it is about making sure that you have all the pieces that fit into place, and you have to have a really good understanding of what's in the draft and what may be there in the certain rounds that you pick. There may be some very good players at the top of a round and a half in front of you that you're not going to get a chance to touch. You have to be projecting to see what may be there for you, you know, a round and a half later. And I think that's up to the scouting staff, general manager, head coach, to truly hone in on that. And I think this staff does a heck of a job.
Last night when it ended, you got the guy you wanted. I know you have visions of how you'd like today to go, whether it's one pick or a multiple of picks in the second and third round. I'm assuming, again, you have that vision of, we do this right, if everybody's done their job, we have an opportunity at the end of day two to feel as good as we do at the end of day one.
Right. It's never going to be, you know, the excitement of a number one pick, but when we're in the back of the room and we know what we're doing and we've been talking about it for months and months and months, if those picks fall into your lap, so to speak, and you're able to pull them off the board, it's a great feeling, whether it's the first round or whether it's the seventh round.
There he is, your Falcons general manager, Thomas Dimitroff. It's all part of Falcons Live Inside the Draft on AtlantaFalcons.com. And welcome back into Falcons Live Inside the Draft. Thomas Dimitroff, earlier you gave some of the numbers, Jay. Seniors, captains, that seems to be not just a thing, it is an occurring thing. It's no longer a trend. This is actually what this team wants to do. Corey, you were a captain
yeah,
at Kentucky.
I mean, I think that's very important. I mean, you know, just looking at this organization from the top down, if you go into that locker room, you won't find a bad person in here. And if there is a bad person here, they'll get rid of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that speaks all the way to the top to Mr. Blank, first-class guy, and that trickles down all the way.
John, let me ask about, Corey was saying, hey, he always hopes there's more defensive guys. I don't know what's going to happen, if it'll just be one pick tonight or if there's a possibility of a multiple getting back into the third round. But I think the other thing that we've kind of realized is they did the work on the offensive side. Now, the offensive line, you have guys here. Now they just have to prove that they can go play, not only protect Matt, open up some holes, give him time to do things. But on the defensive side with Mike Nolan, the concepts and the idea that their growing pains are kind of gone, even with the new guys. Get on board. This is the playbook. This is what we do here. It is going to be interesting to see not only how he fits in, but anybody else they might bring in.
Yeah, and that's going to be the thing, because you're going to be required to learn on the fly, really, more than anything. Because normally when you go to a team that's one play, 10 yards, however you want to put it, from the Super Bowl, you can come in as a rookie and just kind of sit back, you learn, you don't really have the pressure to be there. Desmond Trufant's going to be counted on, at worst, to be a nickel corner. You think about it, with Robert McClain here and just the numbers, Dominic Franks and Asante Samuel still part of this team, he's going to be counted on to come in and not be a guy that just learns special teams and flies around to the football. He's going to be counted on to be out there 50, 60, 70% of the time. You talked about Mike Nolan's defense being a nickel. Corey, if the number's right, maybe 60% of the time last year. That means five defensive backs on the field. That means this guy's got to walk in and play football.
First thing Mike Nolan told me, because people were so hung up on, is he a 4-3 guy, is he a 3-4 guy? He said, well, I did 7 years of this and I did 7 years of that. And then he basically looked at me and said, and I play five DBs a lot, so there's no such thing as a 3-4 or 4-3. Because they don't let you play with 12. Right. When there are five DBs back there, you better be a hybrid type guy who can move up and down.
I think that's the thing that the guys here are most excited about with Mike Nolan. And, you know, the thing that I've noticed is he always does his best to put every particular player in a position that they're best at, you know, and he allows us to kind of tell him, you know, this is what I like to do, you know, and of course you can see it on film, and he tries to get you in those situations, you know, and there's also a lot of flexibility with the positions. You know, if you look at a guy like Babineau, last year he played some defensive end for us, some defensive tackle for us, and, you know, he can do everything. But they say in the locker room, the more you can do, the more valuable you are. So I think everybody likes that aspect.
Jay, you actually see game day, but you also see during the week. One of the things that I love about Mike Nolan is one of the reasons I think he lets guys make plays. And if you let guys make plays, I'll tell you why they like you, because there's more money at the end of the day the more plays you make. I'm not kidding. That's a reality. There are plays to be made in Mike Nolan's defense. Be responsible. You want to move 3 feet this way? I don't care if you're 3 feet there, but when it's time to make the play, go make the play.
Yeah, and the other thing that really stood out to me in Nolan's first year, being up close and watching him, watching practices, is just the intensity that the defense has out on the practice field. I mean, it is really amazing to see, and a lot of that comes from Asante Samuel. We talked all last year. You know, the word swag comes up, and it just kind of trickles down throughout the entire defense. But I think a lot of that also has to do with Mike Nolan, and Corey, you can probably speak on this. Just the intensity that he brings to the practice field, it's almost like you're in the middle of a game. You can feel there's a real sense of competition between the offense and the defense.
Well, you know, Mike definitely brought a different mentality to us, and, you know, I think everybody wanted a change at that point in time.
Well, you're kind. Listen, I'm not looking to tell any tales out of school, but let's be honest. There was somebody needed to come in and take the thumb off a little bit and let guys be responsible, because you're grown men. Be responsible.
Well, I'll say that some of the guys wanted to change at that time. And, you know, Mike is a great guy. He's a player's coach for
Absolutely.
Sure. And his philosophy came in, explained his philosophy to us. And I think everybody got on board quickly. And, you know, anything that he asked of us, you know, guys are very willing to do it, because he's kind of a give-and-take guy, you know, and he'll allow you to kind of put yourself in the best position to be successful.
Well, we heard from Thomas Dimitroff on a one-on-one. I also had a chance to sit down with Desmond Trufant himself. It was interesting. He said on the phone last night in a teleconference call and then at the podium today, he thinks he's a good fit for the Atlanta Falcons. Now, that's something that just might fall out of a guy's mouth, but remember this. When your brother plays for Seattle, you're watching that football game,
right. Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of keeping an eye on what your position is, especially when you know the Falcons are interested. Here's that conversation with Desmond Trufant earlier today.
Good?
Yep.
Welcome to Falcons Live Inside the Draft on AtlantaFalcons.com. My name is Chris Domino, and this man is the number one overall pick for the Atlanta Falcons. Desmond Trufant joins us right now. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm assuming it was a pretty long night, but a good night for the whole Trufant family.
Yes, it was a great night. It was a celebration. You know, I'm so thankful and humbled to be in this position. So, in fact, my parents are ecstatic, you know, all my brothers, so we're just enjoying the time.
Again, this is a little thing that might not be a little thing. You were originally scheduled to go to New York. You just told me you had a situation where your grandfather might not have been able to do the travel, and you decided, you know what, I'm going to stay. I think that's pretty telling. So good for you along those lines as well.
Yes, I wanted my grandfather to be a part of the whole, you know, the whole process. You know, he's being there. He's the reason I'm here. So, you know, I wanted him to be there. And it was a great deal. I'm happy I stayed home.
Good for you. Let's talk a little bit about your career in college. I think it's 47 starts overall. So obviously you have a lot of game experience. I think I asked you last night, if I looked at film of you your freshman year, looked at film of you your senior year, you know, there's just getting bigger, there's certain things because of the weight room and doing the things that you have to do in terms of drills, but I'm assuming I'd see a different player from an instinct point of view and a guy who is more prepared, obviously, for this moment now.
Definitely. You know, a freshman, you know, you're just a young kid, athletic, you know, you're just out there just running around. But my senior year, you know, was really technical sound. Was patient in my technique and my press coverage and off coverage, disciplined eyes, so just slowed my game down completely as far as technique.
I think you have an advantage, not just from playing that many games, but you went through that maturation that some guys, if they only play a year or two in college, maybe don't. You understand now that what my coaches are telling me, if I get this down, the game is a little bit easier on this side.
Yes, definitely. You got to, like you said, your coaches, they know. You know, you got to listen to them. You got to trust them, trust in your technique. You know, once you believe in what you're doing, you know, success comes to you.
What about the idea of kind of faking guys out, quarterbacks? You get to the point where you let them think, I'm about to do this, but you don't have as much of a window as you think you do.
Yeah, definitely. You got to, you know, you got to, it's all a game out there. You know, you got to play, you're going against the quarterback and the receiver.
Right.
So, you know, you got to bait him, you know, things like that. So, you know, I just try to use my instincts.
What about the idea of being prepared for a game? Just again, what I see on film, I trust is about to happen. Therefore, whether a guy's giving you a tell, whether it's a quarterback, receiver, or even offensive lineman, you now know that those things, you can trust whatever it is you believe you have in your back pocket going in.
Yes, definitely. I'm big on film study. You know, that's where you win the game at. You're learning your opponent, being two steps ahead. You know, so I always watch tons of film game week just to get a step ahead. So that's big.
People get hung up, I think, on interception numbers. They might not look at pass breakups, and they probably don't look at the idea of how few times, once you get established, people will actually throw at you. The interception number, I think that's the one that jumps out, but it maybe is not supposed to when you're playing as a corner where they're staying away from your side of the football.
Yes, definitely. You know, like you said, when you get that recognition and status, you know, people don't throw you away as much. But if you lock down one side of the field, they can't throw over there. You know, that's just as impactful as getting two interceptions. So, you know, I just, you know, just try to be consistent in everything I do.
In Seattle, your brother, you would know the NFL's changing a little bit. Quarterbacks who can get outside the pocket. Let's talk a little bit about run support. People say, well, can he go to the line of scrimmage and hit a running back? Sometimes now in today's NFL, it's knowing what a quarterback's about to do. Is he going to break the line? How quickly can I get to him and then knock him down once it's my turn?
Hey, you got to be, I pride myself on being a well-rounded corner. You know, you got to come up, be physical, tackle, get in guys' face, get your nose dirty. So I try to, you know, be well-rounded.
The idea of press coverage, I'm assuming now, and you'll probably get a little bigger, stronger once you start working on at the pro level, but the idea of going up to the line of scrimmage and give a guy a little bump. Sometimes if you let a guy get into the route, I don't care how good you are, it's a little bit more difficult to defend him.
Yes, definitely. You got to be patient in your technique with your press. You know, good with your hands, good with your eyes and your pad level. So you just got to be good in your technique.
Last thing, you just mentioned in the press conference the two guys whose games as DBs you really like. Now, you didn't pick any two guys. You picked two guys who obviously a lot of Falcons fans and NFL fans know. Give everybody the two names that you want to be like and tell them why you think there's a chance you can do some of those things.
Well, I try to mold my game after Darrell Revis and Charles Woodson. You know, for Darrell Revis, just because his technique is flawless. He's so patient and strong at the line of scrimmage. And Charles Woodson, you know, you can put him all over the field in a slot. Safety, you know, he plays a couple different roles, so I try to move my game after him.
Hey, I do have one more. When you're a freshman or a sophomore, if you get beaten, it happens to everybody. The idea of being able to forget, it's on to the next play. Can you explain how important that is in the maturation of a DB?
It's big. It's one of the biggest things at corner, the mental game. Yeah. You know, you gotta realize you're not going to win 100% of the time. That's just how the game is. But can you bounce back? Can you come make the tackle on the next play? Can you get the break up the next play? So you just got to move on.
And if it stays in your head, these guys are pros. Whether they're talking, chirping a little bit, they're letting you know. And I think they find out pretty quickly in this league whether you can handle that adverse moment as opposed to just riding success.
Yeah, definitely. It's all a mind game out there. Everybody's trying to get in each other's head. So you just got to stay calm, cool, and collected.
Appreciate it very much. Desmond Trufant, he's the number one pick of your Atlanta Falcons. We'll come back with more right here on AtlantaFalcons.com. I enjoyed the young man, as a matter of fact, earlier today. Let's talk a little bit about Thomas Dimitroff plus Mike Smith plus what's really still left to come. You gave the numbers, seniors, captains. That certainly is coming to play. Mike Smith, a defensive guy, coordinator changes last year. Corey, I'll ask you, if you were playing GM for a second, let's say it's the second-round pick, where do you think the need for this team is if you could actually square peg, square hole it?
Whew, that's tough. You know, but I think it all starts up front, so either O-line or D-line. I know there's a good guard coming out of Kentucky, so we'll go with that.
We're shouting out to him here right now.
Larry Warford.
All right. You know. And by the way, if you really look at it, one quarterback, no running backs in the first round, and guys who are really, really close to the football flying all off every board.
You know, that was interesting. I watched a good portion of the draft last night. I felt bad for the kid sitting in the green room, you know, but he'll bounce back and hopefully use that as some motivation. And I'm sure he'll come off the board pretty soon here. You know, but quarterbacks in this league are critical. You know, you're only going to go as far as they take you, so everybody's always looking.
Jay, let me ask you again. Let's just say it's just a second-round pick. Even though you're handfuls of yards away from the Super Bowl, guys make rosters, guys leave rosters. What do you think might be coming up, if it is that second round, somewhere close to 60.
You know what's really interesting to me, and this happens every year, but I kept saying it before this draft, is that you're going to have some very good players who fall into the second round, and it's because you're having you've got so many players this year who were kind of even, and you don't know what that separating factor is. And we saw last night, just as an example, Buffalo taking EJ Manuel. Nobody saw that coming. So now you've got one player who probably should have gone at that point who now keeps falling back, and it just, it's a domino effect. So what's really interesting to me is you've got some guys who were projected to go late in the first round, Tank Carradine, Margus Hunt, Alex Okafor. Some of these guys that you're talking about, if you're looking at a defensive end, who are now just sitting there in the second round, and will they get down to 60 is going to be interesting.
Or can you move up to get them?
Or can you move up to get them? But I think there's enough names on there that it entices you to kind of maybe take a closer look.
One of the other positions talked about, obviously, when your Hall of Fame tight end is going to be walking away, tight end was a conversation even in the first round. It'll become a conversation today. Mm-hmm. To me, John, I'll ask you if you buy with this. I'm not sure if you don't have the third round pick that you can actually take the tight end in the second round. Get the third round pick. Then I think it's more viable to actually go tight end defensive player.
It's going to be a really interesting scenario, Chris, because there's two tight ends that are sitting there that one of the guys in Zach Ertz out of Stanford was a high first-round grade. Many people said him and Tyler Eifert were interchangeable as to who was one and who was two. Well, he's still sitting there in the second round. This is a kid that, do you want to go two tight end set? You want to have two great pass catchers with Ertz and with Tony Gonzalez? The other guy's Gavin Escobar out of San Diego State, 6'6", 250-pound, can run, can catch the ball. It's going to be an interesting dilemma for Thomas Dimitroff. I will agree with this, though. If there was still a third-round pick, it's a lot easier to go take a tight end. Without a third-round pick, you're now talking about not addressing maybe other needs, as Corey talked about, both of the lines of scrimmage until the fourth round. There's a big value drop from the second to the fourth round.
I think, Corey, too, and I don't know how much you know about particular guys in this draft, but really what we heard, and Thomas Dimitroff himself said it last week, this might not be the wild draft. That's code for, by the way, there aren't quarterbacks that are going to get people excited. And even now we found out running backs who are going to get people excited. But it's a solid draft. And I think if you get solid upperclassmen, a lot of seniors now, guys who have played big-time football and obviously conferences like the SEC, now all of a sudden you have this idea of not only are they coming necessarily for guys' jobs, but they're coming in maybe more prepared than some other draft classes in the past would have.
Well, you know, one thing that I've learned since I've been here, when I came out of college, I was kind of infatuated with this, okay, where are you drafted? But, you know, being here for 3 years now, I've seen guys, you know, that get drafted, they can't play, and then I've seen guys that don't get drafted who are really good players. And, you know, after you go through camp with some players, you kind of formulate your own opinion on them. And, you know, the players in the locker room know, you know, regardless of where you were drafted, hey, is this guy a first-round player or right. is he not?
How long does that actually take? I mean, really going to evaluate a guy now, being around the league for 3 years, how long does – I mean, is that a month of August evaluation or is it game day?
You know, well, you know, you do have difference in some guys are more performers in a game right. and not really well in practice. But I think a week in camp practices – will tell you pretty much all you need to know about a guy. And, you know, everybody in that locker room is going to formulate an opinion on you one way or the other. And that also includes how you behave in meetings.
Sure.
When coach calls on you, do you know the answer to the question? Is it a simple question? Should you know the answer to that question? And, you know, and I guess I would say you'll be treated accordingly. So
you set yourself up for how your day-to-day life is going to go in a locker room.
Well, I think so. You know, if you're a guy that everybody feels like you're not taking it seriously, you know, especially here, then, you know, they're going to tell you about it, and they're going to let you know it, and that's unacceptable.
I'll ask you, but I'll also ask Jay, what's the warning? You know, I don't know if it's verbalized. Put your oar in the water and let's go. You know, there are certain guys who need a little bit of a kick in the pants. And to me, that's kind of okay. You're in a different world, but if it has to be done two or three times, now you're getting into territory where I don't think you're really where you're supposed to be.
See, but this is where I really think you see the strategy come out with Thomas and how he approaches signing players both in the draft and in free agency. And you get those guys that he talks all the time about having a strong locker room, having a locker room full of leaders. You don't have problem guys. Then you can afford to get somebody who maybe doesn't pass through all the parts of the filter, come in, you know, go under the wing of some of the veterans and kind of learn what it's like to be a rookie.
Before we talk about draft picks around the division, and we'll take a look really at the conference as well, because, you know, it's really funny. The biggest misnomer in the NFL is there are six spots in the NFC to make the postseason. Well, no, there's not. There's three. You get to win your division or be a wild card team. The other three you have no control over. Right. So there really are only three spots that teams are fighting for. But I think one of the other things, I think every once in a while, not only are you not sure if a guy's really ready to put his oar in the water and row with everybody, some guys get up here, John, quite honestly, and this game ain't quite as fun as it used to be because everybody else is looking to make a dollar off your rear end.
Right.
I mean, they really are. They're looking to bang you to make their money. Some guys might not want to play as much as you were hoping they wanted to play.
Man, we have heard that 100 times in the league. Alex Barron, I think, was the guy's name.
Now you're going to drop names.
Well, I'm going to say.
I wasn't sure if you're going to drop names. All right, Nathan Davis.
Yeah, this was a guy that was a high draft pick, and after taking his time in the league, realized this isn't for me anymore. I'll make my money, and I made a ton of cash doing so, but this isn't so much fun. It's important to have somebody that's going to continue to love football and realize, yes, this is a business, but this is still a kid's game that you're out there getting paid a lot of money for.
How much do you look at the – go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, like I said, there's a huge jump between college and the NFL. So, you know, when you get out there your first day, you're going to take your licks. But there's two ways you can react to that situation. You know, you have a good number of guys that say, okay, I need to step my game up, and I'm going to come out here tomorrow and I'm going to do better. And then there's some guys that just, I don't belong here. I can't compete with these guys. They're just too good. You know, it's just like the little kid that always gets beat by his older brother in basketball, and some kids just, I don't want to play basketball anymore. So,
a little bit of a shutdown factor.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just depends on your personality. Yeah. Have you been challenged before? Has everything always come easy to you? Have you been the big kid all your life and now everybody's as big as you are and as strong as you are? Or have you had to fight? You know, have you had some, you know, adversity in your life? And, you know, a lot of guys should get that in college if they're challenged.
Well, the idea, too, this is a funnel. You know, it's bigger at the top, and it gets real small, and there's only a small percentage. It's the best of the best, now of the best, when you're trying to play at this level. As a player, how much do you look at, let's talk about the division itself, how much do you look at what Tampa, New Orleans, obviously, you know, Carolina. How much do you look at what teams are doing in the offseason from free agency through the draft?
Well, I definitely keep my eye on it more so than I do with other teams because, you know, we got to play them twice a year. And, you know, kind of like you said with the playoffs, you know, what they do, we need to beat those teams if we're going to make the playoffs. And, you know, we're in one of the better divisions, I feel. You know, Carolina provides a completely different offense than you're going to see, you know, majority of the season. Tampa Bay has a very good offensive line. I wouldn't hesitate to say it's probably going to be the best in the NFL if they're all going to be healthy. And New Orleans, Drew Brees, you know, he's had his way with us a few times since I've been here. So that's always a challenge. But, you know, I see they have all gone defensive this draft, you know, so our offense will have their hands full.
Let's start with Revis, obviously going to Tampa. Mm-hmm. But they also get Golston. He sort of gets lost in the shuffle. Pro Bowl safety, Pro Bowl corner. You didn't have to draft. Now, you didn't have the first pick, but if you told me you're going to get Golston and Revis and say that's the end of my Thursday, first day of the draft, that's a really good first day because all it cost you was money.
Right, exactly. And, you know, they've got some good young players along the defensive line there as well. Very good defense there. I thought they made out very well in free agency. So you get a guy like Revis, you get Golson, you know, suddenly your secondary is looking to challenge the wide receiver corps.
Not only that, you got a line that a lot of it was built in the last two or three years. Mm-hmm. Throw those guys in the defensive backfield. Mm-hmm. You know better than anybody, John. Now all of a sudden your defensive line gets better because of what you have at the back end.
Well, you got Gerald McCoy up front, a disruptor. And don't forget about Mark Barron, a guy that they drafted sixth overall last year out of Alabama. That's a kid that, as he learns the game, he's going to do nothing but get better. They were historically bad pass defense a season ago. I think I read somewhere 20 yards short of the worst pass defense in the history of the NFL. Well, they stopped the run. Well, that's because teams continue to throw. If Revis is healthy, Tampa Bay goes from a team that you think is 7 or 8 wins to a team that could be challenging right here for a division title.
And tell me if I'm right about this. I think they carry the crown of the most disliked team in the NFL. They play hard. I'm not kidding. They're edgy. Some have gone out and said they're dirty. Rick Shannon walked in there, and let me tell you something. You know, Ronde Barber said something. Ronde Barber said, I looked around for the first couple of weeks, and what is this man doing? And you know what he said in week three? I know what he's doing. We're about to get tougher than we've been in a long time around here.
For sure. You know, they've always played hard, you know. Mm-hmm. And last year, you know, they had a lot of injuries up front and playing with some backup, but those guys battled. And
well, they didn't play hard the year, 2 years ago because that's what got their coach fired. Well. That became a country club over there.
It happens. You know, I guess it's kind of a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. A couple of things start going bad, start feeling sorry for yourself, and next thing you know, you don't win any games.
Greg Shannon, we had him on the radio, and I knew him from his days at Rutgers. He said, I'm going out my way. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to lose this job, I'm going out my way. My way is to actually fire off the ball. And by the way, if you don't like it when a kneel-down play is coming, punch us in the mouth the next time. That's why I think they carry that crown. Let's talk about Carolina, Jay. Mm-hmm. I thought what Carolina did at the end of the year last year, because if you're not a playoff team, you don't seem to matter in this league. They went from losing games late, and you guys saw it firsthand, mm-hmm. to being a football team that all of a sudden won games. Ron Rivera keeps his job because of the way they finished up the season.
Yeah, scary good way that they finished the season last year. I think you really started to see them come into their potential, and you've seen how they've built this defense, too. You've got Kuechly. You know, they just drafted Star Lutulele, and that's one of the guys that I'm looking at. I said it last night on Twitter. Is like, I can't wait to see the battles between him and Peter Kahns. Now you got two young linemen, and you know if they're facing off against one another, it could be an epic battle for years to come.
I'll go a step further. I think everybody in this offensive line, from tackle to tackle, is going to dance with that guy at some point during these two games. They're not just sticking him here. This is the type of guy that's supposed to be able to move up and down your line.
Well, think about what they have on the line. You talk about Hardy at one defensive end, Charles Johnson at the other. You can't chip on those guys if Star Lotulelei can play like many people think. The fact that he fell, and I'm watching the draft doing some coverage on 790 The Zone last night, and I'm going, Carolina's going to get their pick of defensive tackles, whether it's Sheldon Richardson, Sharif Floyd, or Star Lotulelei. The guy that I liked the best was Lotulelei. We saw him in the Sun Bowl against Georgia Tech where he's picking up guys and throwing them and doing basically whatever he wants.
Is that legal?
I think it is on the defense. You can do that, can't you? Pick them up and throw them.
If they're going to cut like that, you can do what you want.
By the way, get rid of them. Get them off your knees and get them off your ankles. Got to ask you about Cam Newton. We were remiss. You certainly have watched enough film, and then you get on the field with the guy. Not only is he a physical specimen, but I also think something flipped with him last year where trying to be the only guy who wins a football game is really not doable in this league. Do your job to win a football game, and they started winning.
Well, you know, I think that you know, I've seen Cam a long time ago, a long, long time ago, when Florida was beating the brakes off of us. He came in and ran a couple more in, you know. But, you know,
how many did he score?
I think he only scored one, but the game was – you know, long over.
Were you insulted, personally insulted, that he was still out there?
You know, well, he wasn't the starter, so, I mean, I can't be mad, you know. But, you know, my philosophy on that is if you're embarrassed, then stop him.
You get 60 minutes.
So
it's their clock.
It is what it is, you know.
But is he, because his rookie year was so phenomenal, it was historical, then there was that backlash, sophomore slump and everything else. I'll ask you point blank. You think this guy finds his rightful place now on that list, that shorter list of quarterbacks?
I mean, you know, I definitely think he's capable of being an elite quarterback. You know, his skill set is a unique one and one that you don't, you know, you're probably never really going to see that combination of things together. And, you know, as he goes, Carolina goes, you saw, you know, the differences in games, you know, when we were up there last year. Right. He ran wild on us and you know, they beat us pretty good. So I think that he's definitely capable of that, but it's really on him, his mind frame, and you know, him trusting his teammates to do everything they're supposed to do.
And to be elite, you can't have a lot of throwaway games. You can have bad games. You can't have throwaway games. He seemed to suffer from that.
My point on Cam Newton, I want to see how he reacts, as he's got a new offensive coordinator this year, Rob Chudzinski, taking the job in Cleveland. Does that change anything? You know, schematically, they seemed to streamline at the end of last year what they were doing with him, and it worked. I mean, we saw the game, unfortunately, up there. They had their way with the Falcons. Can he adapt with another year trying to learn a new system in the offseason? And can they put some pieces around him?
He also had to mature. I mean, you know, that's a big part of it, too, is some of these legendary now stories of sitting at the locker for 45 minutes with your pads on. I mean, I'm not trying to, but the reality is, okay, if that happened, now don't let it happen again. Not because somebody told you not to make it happen, but because you learned that's not what a leader does, and it's time to be a leader. And I think that might be another reason why Carolina is not an easy out. Two games here and then the rest of their time on the schedule. Let's talk about New Orleans. Now, we have to, so nobody, you know, we have to, because this is what happens. But I do think I saved them for last for a reason. I think people love talking about the New Orleans Saints here in Falcons country because it's the team you truly despise the most. Sean Payton comes back, and a lot of people are trying to figure out how many wins did it cost them, and now the game is how many wins will it mean for them. What are your thoughts on New Orleans?
I got to think that it makes a difference having him back, and I think it's going to add to the confidence of that team. I mean, you're talking already about a confident team, but I think last year that really threw them off a little bit.
Well, shame. Let me throw this in. Mm-hmm. Shame on them. I mean, my God, there comes a point where you got to stop talking about it and go play football. And I just thought Drew Brees, who was the leader of that team and a bona fide Hall of Famer, there's a point where you got to let it go, brother. You're either going to win or you're not going to win on Sunday. Now, I do agree with him walking in the door from day one makes them a better football team, though.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the way they've just approached the offseason, obviously that they're without a second-round pick, so we'll see how they handle that. But picking up a safety last night, I think, is a good sign that they are focused on the areas where they need to improve, because let's face it, that secondary was one of the worst in the league last year. So they're obviously looking to shore up some of the issues that they have.
If I would have told you the New Orleans Saints, a couple of years removed from a Super Bowl, they were historically bad on defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they set records, all the records that you don't want to set. It really was pretty amazing to watch what they weren't able to do last year.
They were the worst in the history of the NFL. I mean, that's how bad that defense was. And you go out and you get Rob Ryan this year to come in, change, go to a 3-4. I'll be honest, I was ecstatic that they took a safety, because there was a kid in Jarvis Jones sitting there, and I'm praying, football gods, please do not allow this kid to go there in a 3-4 set where Rob Ryan is going to turn him loose to do what he does best, and that's get after the passer. They haven't addressed that. And until they address getting a pass rush, Matt Ryan can still have his way with that team, as he did in both games last year. Throw the football where you want to. They're going to be better defensively because they can't be any worse.
What's the reality of not liking the New Orleans Saints when you're a member of the Falcons?
I mean, it's real. You know, the fans here are crazy, you know, and a lot of my family is from New Orleans, so I got to hear that all year round.
Did you
round.
Just break that right here? I don't know if a lot of people knew that.
I mean, either way.
Are they Saints fans?
Yeah, a lot of them
so
are.
So what is blood thicker than sainthood, or is it not?
It's kind of like they just don't say anything around
it doesn't exist.
But they, you know, they're season ticket holders and everything, and they just – go. And my mom lives in Laplace, which is right outside of New Orleans, so her coworkers are always sending hate grams and that sort of thing. But
send them what?
Hate grams.
Hate grams.
You know, or talking junk, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, and you know, but it's cool. You know, we look forward to them every year. We respect them. Obviously, Drew Brees is a very good football player, and I'm looking forward to opening the season with him. I think that's the best way to kick off the year. And it should be a good one.
I love that football game. Now, there's going to be a moment whether Sean Payton runs out in front or what. But the moment that they put his foch up on that big screen, you know, as unbelievably great as Drew Brees is, that building is going to start shaking. He is he's the man there now. And that first game for them to actually see him for 1 o'clock against the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know if the schedule gods were smiling or cursing at that point. That's an unbelievable matchup in Weekend 1.
Man, I went on radio in New Orleans. We've got a lot of people that we're friends with down there. The day the schedule was released, they called me. We got to have you on. You're the guy that came up with the When the Saints Go 0-1 song, The Saints Go 0-4. They were fired up. I got more Twitter
hate.
You
were that guy?
That was me. I got more Twitter hate from that city maybe than anywhere else around the country.
And, you know, what's funny is we hear it all the time on Twitter, and usually, you know, it's the week before the game it kind of starts up. Well, we are officially in hate week right now. So, I mean, I've been hearing it already and using that block button quite a bit on Twitter.
What does that block button do?
It means that they can't talk to you anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Nice. I was not aware that
you
there
blocked
was
me. So you now have to know how that works.
I don't think somebody actually accused me of blocking somebody else. I was like, wait, I wouldn't even know how to do any of those things. I just exist. I turn it on and there it is. If it's not there, it's not. But it is interesting. What's the reality in college when you're getting ready for an opening game? The month of August sort of leads up to that game. Does it sort of work that way in the NFL? Now, you're trying to come up with a roster and you're trying to actually work against different systems, but what's the reality of New Orleans being the first game for you guys?
Well, you know, I think one thing that's going to work, right, it benefit both teams is we know them pretty well. We know what they're going to do. Right. I mean, we pretty much have a good understanding before they even give us the game plan. And throughout the preseason, I'm sure everybody's going to be really thinking towards that. And as we start to prepare throughout preseason, I think coaches try to throw in a little bit of this, a little bit of that to get ready for whoever is going to be the first game.
You know, they weren't drafted. Let's do this real quick. We got a couple of seconds and we're going to give something away. 15 seconds, 20 seconds on, I'll let you choose, OC or Steven Jackson, who to me are like draft picks. I think really Thursday, yesterday, was not just Desmond Trufant. It was everything you did in the offseason. I'll let you pick a guy. Which one do you want to pick?
Oh, between those two guys?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man. It's so hard. I'm going to go with Steven Jackson just because of the extra element that he gives you in that offense, just with being a pass catcher, just being that extra weapon. I mean, we were talking about Darrell Revis. He can't cover everybody, and especially now when you've got Jackson coming up.
I think of the third and four, fourth and four against San Francisco, and I think it's a different mindset if Steven Jackson's in the backfield. Absolutely. No knock to Michael Turner or anybody else. Mm-hmm. I'll let you take Osi.
I'll take Osi. When I was growing up, I always wanted to rush the passer at about 120 pounds. So a guy that can get after the quarterback, you saw how important that was in the playoffs. Seattle and San Francisco were able to move the ball because the pressure wasn't there. He's motivated. He's on a lesser contract. He felt disrespected in New York. You come here back to your a place where you call home and have an opportunity to help this team, I'm all in.
I'll tell you what I love. I love players. Both of those guys have done it. They bet on themselves. Mm-hmm. It's money. It's a money league. It's a business. But when you bet on yourself to get to that second year of the contract, I'll always tell you that if a guy's betting on himself financially, I'll go with that. Real quick, let's start to wrap up. We're going to give this away in 1 second. Desmond Trufant, actually, I think we should do it now. Desmond Trufant signed three of these helmets. Tell everybody how they can actually win one, Jack.
Yeah, there are only three of these in the world, and I'm holding one of them. Desmond Trufant signed a draft 2013 helmet, mini helmet. You can log on to Twitter or Facebook, the Atlanta Falcons official accounts, facebook.com/AtlantaFalcons, or on Twitter at @Atlanta_Falcons. Reply, comment to both of those accounts for your chance to win one of these. You got to answer this trivia question. The trivia question is, who was the last University of Washington cornerback chosen in the first round? Go ahead and answer that, and you've got a chance to win.
Well, God bless the internet, because I'm not sure people are going to actually pull that one right out of their hats.
Google.
I think if you want to give me a guarantee that you're going to the Super Bowl this year, that would be fantastic. I'll use that, and I'll run with it myself. I think the hardest thing the Atlanta Falcons have working against them is being a postseason team 5 out of 6 years in the NFL, because it just doesn't happen very often.
Well, I think that what they've built here was built the right way, and it's built to last, and I really don't see that changing anytime soon. But what we've got to do as an organization is put that behind us and continue to move forward and not be satisfied with that. We got to take that next step.
I'm going to ask you, if these guys give a guarantee, it doesn't mean as much. You want to look into that camera? It'd be nice and everything. Me too, by the way. I'm including myself. You want to look in that camera and actually tell Falcons fans what it is to expect in 2013?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and guarantee that we're going to do our very best to get to the Super Bowl and win it.
That is a 3-year veteran right there, boys. That is a man who knows his business. All right. Jay, appreciate it. John, appreciate it. Corey, obviously, appreciate it. Appreciate all the people who helped put it together. Appreciate Falcons fans. I'm not kidding. I'm prideful now on what it is, this team, this organization, what Arthur Blank has built, what fans do, how they react now, the wins and losses. I think there's a passion. I've lived here 20 years now. I think it's at an all-time high. So give yourselves a pat on the back. We appreciate it. Tell your friends about it. This is going to be online right there at AtlantaFalcons.com. If you didn't get a chance, or if you only saw part of it, tell your friends. Make sure everybody gets a chance to tune in. We'll do it again real soon right here on AtlantaFalcons.com.